Welcome to the Kickstart Garage, where we want to inspire and educate the leaders of tomorrow. Join us as we learn from the best in the business.
Welcome back to the Kickstart Garage. I'm your host, Sam John Byrne, and I'm accompanied by my co-host, Gavin Quigley. In partnership with Magnate 100, we're joined by two exceptional young entrepreneurs from Galway, Eric Genetics and Dara Jordan. Welcome to the show. How are you guys doing?
Great. Thanks, man, for having us, lads. Really appreciate it.
And first of all, before we begin, I just want to tip my hat to the both of you and give you a massive congrats on establishing an office over in New York. An incredible achievement. And I just seen you were on the Irish Times today. How surreal does that feel?
Bonkers. You know, like even the fact that the articles are being written about us, you know, like we've seen a lot of our peers in Magnate 100 and even just generally getting written about. And it's very, very surreal to see those publications be written about ourselves. So it's genuinely crazy. No words.
How do you feel about it, Eric?
I'm truly blown away. It's my first time actually being featured in the Irish Times or kind of in national paper coverage. So it was really exciting waking up this morning at 6 a.m. and just seeing Silicon Republic and other online papers just posting about us. It's just crazy. I really appreciate it.
It's writing back home. Mom, I made it.
We'll buy the paper tomorrow, Mom. Oh, we did it.
Yeah. Go down to Centra.
Okay, before we talk more about Graft and Digital, could you give us a bit of background about yourself? So I'll let you guys, whichever one wants to go first.
Yeah, perfect. So my name is Eric Genetics. I'm 20 years old. I'm actually turning 21 next week, the 14th of August. So I suppose after graduating from Leaving Cert, I actually went in working in an IT job, and I worked in hospitality as well for about 2 years. With I suppose the plan in mind of actually starting pilot school. I wanted to really become a pilot, so that was my original goal. And as the years went on, I was kind of in the second year, and I kind of felt like it was very slow progress. Like I had to save up around 130 grand, which I was making good progress for, but it wasn't as close as I wanted to be, if you get me. So I kind of decided we have to do something. So I reached out to Darren. We started talking.
Yeah, I suppose on my end, so I started this one as in Leaving Cert. So Eric would have been just graduated from school and I was in Leaving Cert. So like I had an interest in marketing and business for a good few years, and I'd actually done a work experience in a very big marketing agency nationally that had triggered my interest in marketing. And I could see that, one, I thought the agencies weren't doing a good enough job being attentive for the money they were charging. I thought as a younger person I could do better. So I started studying marketing and business in my spare time from 15 to 18, and then we went and launched Graft. It was just kind of a perfect storm with Eric approaching me, and then us just kind of pulling Graft together with the intent of just helping businesses maximize their online presence. Because if you looked around then and still now, realistically, I still don't feel like businesses are getting the full value, the full ROI on their investment on digital.
Yeah. And so you've kind of given us an intro to Graft and Digital and how it started. Would you say that's for both of you your first entrepreneurial endeavor, or did you have any other excursions into entrepreneurship before then?
I suppose on my end, this would have been the kind of first official one. Like I went on kind of project-based businesses, you know, obviously TY work experience, and I did a BT Young Scientist project that got picked up by the GEA and stuff that never got running, didn't get funding. And obviously the whole entrepreneurial thing of selling sweets in school and stuff, did that as well. But no, this would have been the first official kind of entrepreneurial venture.
Yeah, it was my first one as well. Actually, I would have been, I'm actually proud of myself in a way, because I was very much kind of a one man army kind of thing. I always believed that I could do it the best or whatever. So I kind of had to grow personally to actually work in a team. And especially now, you know, we've expanded hugely over the past 3 years, and it's been great.
The success that you guys have had is exceptional for your age as well. Like, you know, and like, there's just so much opportunity ahead of you. But let's talk about Graft and Digital. Could you give us a timeline from when you started till today? I suppose, you know, starting when you came up with the idea.
Yeah, absolutely. So I suppose me and Eric's phone call, myself and Eric's phone call would have been in August 2018. So nearly creeping up into 3 years. We started as a digital marketing agency. So I suppose it was myself, Eric, and Jack that would have kind of started Grafton together. Jack would have had a videography, photography, and graphic design background. So that was a pillar of content creation. Eric, as he alluded to, had a background in IT. So he would have built the website. And again, I've been studying marketing because I'd seen the spot there. So I was going to do social media marketing. So I suppose the whole idea is that we're going to be all-in-one package for SMEs. That was what we were going to aim at. And again, a lot of people our age have gone that route as well. But I suppose we started with that. And then over the next couple of years, we realized that, well, for ourselves anyway, trying to make that profitable was quite difficult. So we scaled the team. We were up to a team of 10. With the social media website and content creation. And we just found trying to make that profitable in the SME sector very, very difficult. So that was kind of a year and a half, just coming up on 2 years. Then we decided to pivot exclusively into websites. So we said, we'll get niche down and we'll get really, really good at this one thing that is a bit more profitable than the other section of the business. And then as we went along with our team getting more experienced, and with the background in app development, we added app development. So we just decided to niche down to those exclusively. So obviously now we have website and app design development, SEO optimization, hosting and maintenance. And that was within the last 12 months or so, we would have niched down to that. I suppose when we started as well, we started in the school. So our first few meetings would have been on my lunch break during leaving cert. Then we got it. Then we were very lucky to have a local community space, the Clare Galway Hub, and Josette Farrell actually allowing us to use that space free of charge because we weren't really earning any money. And then it was May of last year, we moved into an office space a few kilometers away from myself and Eric's house. And then we moved into a bigger office space and here thereafter. And now our team's a bit more international. It wasn't international, but a bit more spread out. So we have some of the team there and some of the team kind of spread around a bit as well. So yeah, and it's just been a crazy journey. Like even trying to get our first client was bonkers, you know, like we were just ringing, just trying to get anyone to give us a shot. And thankfully a couple of businesses did take the leap on us, but it was 3 years, a lot of ups and downs because we had very little money when we started as well. So all of it's been self-funded. So it's been an interesting journey just trying to navigate that, especially while hiring staff and trying to expand and trying to scale this business.
Incredible story of hustle, but it sounds like all you guys have got complementary skill sets to tie it all together. So that's fantastic. Dara, I actually watched your video titled How I Started a Six-Figure Business at 17. And one segment I related back to from doing freelancing, I'm sure Gavin would as well, is starting from zero clients and then, you know, getting a few under the belt. And as you progress, it's like usually the first couple of months are slow, but then suddenly you get this snowball effect of just, you know, constant business. How did you go about initially, you know, getting the first client under the belt? Was it a case, I know you were saying there, just ringing up, but was it like, say, for instance, underpricing and over delivering on what you were offering? I mean, what was your strategy there? And I suppose, how did you manage the additional business that came after that first client? Obviously, as you grow, it can become quite challenging managing multiple projects and ensuring consistent quality.
Yeah, I really wish I had like a master strategy we started out with. But it was just exasperating any relationships we had, friends of friends, anything. We went through our entire network and just tried to get anyone to give us a shot. And like you said there, underpricing, over-delivering. Like our first couple of websites were a couple hundred quid. You know, and like if you look at industry standard, that is well under what another agency would charge. But again, we were still just trying to find our feet. And I think by charging that and trying to utilize our network and trying to do the best job possible and to get the business owners could see they were making the effort, it helped the snowball. But I suppose our first client was literally a recommendation. They needed a social media company. They didn't really have much of a budget. They were a local hotel and they kind of took the shot on us. We went in, we pitched them. We thought like we had all our documents printed out. We handed them slips as we walked in and they gave us a shot. I think it was like €250 a month or something. Like it was still very, very humble, but that was our first ever job we got. Was that social media gig. But again, just ringing up businesses locally. I remember I priced a job way, way over what we should have charged. And they said, that is absolutely crazy. Do you want to charge that money? Because they were like, oh, how much roughly will it cost? And I said, I never priced it before. And they ended up hanging up on me because of how much I tried to charge. But again, I didn't know how many hours it would take. Even, you know, now we have it a lot more fine tuned. So a lot of trial and error, a lot of just chancing our arm. If I could go back, I would have started a lot more niche. So we were willing to take anything. And you'll see now that we've kind of niched down a bit, even with Grafton now. But if I could go back, I would niche down a lot faster and just target an industry and get really, really good at that industry. But again, it was a lot of just trial and error and just seeing what stuck.
I get you, yeah. And especially now as well, with the whole the agency space, obviously the industry that you guys are operating in, it's pretty explosive at the moment, especially considering the massive shift online. during COVID for most businesses. But no doubt it's been probably fantastic tailwind for you in a way. But with that obviously comes more competition to cater for the expanding market. So I was wondering, how do you guys, and I'll get both your opinions on this, how do you guys stand out from the crowd?
I'll take lead on this. So, well, I suppose we've done a lot of market assessment before we decided to fully niche down to the web development. So we don't you know, extensive research on what our competitors are doing, and we kind of listened to the market, because a lot of customers had I suppose a bit of a bad experience throughout the industry with web developers, whether that be agency or freelancers. And a lot of things we heard is bad communication and I suppose untransparent pricing. So we decided to focus on that and making that as transparent as possible. And we were actually very happy, because we received an all Ireland business accreditation, which does represent things like customer centricity and trust. So that's what we identified as a USP for us. And we just kept growing that, building relationships with our customers and you know, introducing different systems in order to keep the communication open.
Yeah, absolutely. Like that they were the big ones. But again, there are also two things that take a lot of time to build, because everyone says, they come in, oh, we have great communication, we have great customer service, da 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 da. It's been a bit overused. You can't reuse that as a sales tool. So that really helped in the referral sense. And that has been our biggest generation of business. We have inbound sales, outbound sales, but referrals by far has been our biggest generation of business. Because once we pull someone into the business and we start working with them, then they realize that what we're actually saying, or they identify our number one thing that we want to identify. And then they recommend us on. So again, it's a more a long-term play, but again, we found it works well over time.
Very good. Just before, I was actually, when I was doing the script for this episode, I was watching, and I'm probably sure you guys might have seen it, The Founder with Michael Keaton, about the McDonald's story. And as I was watching it, a couple of questions popped into my head as I was writing. And one way the original founders of McDonald's, Richard and Morris McDonald, became more competitive and increased sales was by noticing the bulk of their sales only came from three items, which was burgers, fries, and soft drinks. And with that, they substantially reduced the menu offerings to focus on the efficiency of, you know, getting a small number of items to clients. From the website, I can see you guys offer multiple services. So I suppose my question is, if you were to reduce your service offerings to just two services, what would they be and why?
So I would have said it would be e-commerce and hosting. And the reason I say that is because that's the most amount of room for growth. Also, like, COVID-19 has really, I think, pushed an industry transition towards digital selling online, being online in general. And I just think that's the place to grow, and that's the place that the platform to be on to grow.
And then obviously on the hosting side, one thing we want to target, and one thing we saw over and over again, we saw a lot of people in our industry go under during a couple of last few recessions or during hardships in, let's say, COVID or whatever, due to the fact they didn't have strong enough monthly recurring revenue. So one thing over the last 12 months, before we pivoted just to website and app, we would have done maintenance yearly. And then we strictly pivoted to monthly recurring revenue. And actually, some of that's because of the Magnate 100 advice we actually got from one of the calls. And that's been transformative, because then every month, due to our direct debit system, we know we have X amount of thousands of euros coming in every month, regardless of what happens. So we're currently building that up. And that in looking back at history, recession proofs a lot of businesses, and also increases the value of the business as well. So that they would be the two reasons. I say e-commerce and like the hosting, like Eric said.
Solid tip from Magnate 100 there. Back in November, you published a video about receiving a letter in relation to being acquired, which I was like, what? When I was seeing that video, it's crazy. Especially early on for you guys. I mean, you must be doing something right to be drawing that type of attention. But could you talk to us a bit about that, and what was going through your mind, and what did you learn from it?
Yeah, no, that's a great question, and well spotted as well. Yeah, like, if I'm being completely honest, we received a letter in the post, and basically it was from this very, very large company, international company, looking to acquire us. And personally, I thought it was a scam at the start. I actually didn't believe it, because I was like, why would someone randomly pick our business name and post us a letter, you know, trying to acquire us? So, but it was actually Eric that kind of said, no, let's just play it out and just see what happens. And again, like, we had no interest at the time of actually selling the business. But again, neither of us had gone through a business acquisition before. We were kind of interested to see what their angle was. Why were they trying to acquire us? So we said we'd entertain the idea. And then we went through the process. We chatted with the CEO and CFO of the company, and there was back and forth. And we kind of went along with it because we really wanted to, like, as you said, learn as much as we could. And that was really, really interesting because we got to see from a larger corporation perspective what to look for in due diligence, what's red flags, what's, you know, green flags, what are things that companies will look for, what should we have in place that we don't have currently have in place when they're asking for with regards contracts or this, what's your MRR, what's your monthly recurring revenue, all these different things that they would look for and how they generate a value of your business via EBITDA. So we learned a lot about, you know, actually valuing a business, what's valuable, what's good, what's bad. And actually, we actually thankfully have a really good relationship with them. But I suppose we decided to turn it down, and we actually got a good enough offer. I think it was actually very fair what they offered us. And we decided not to go with it for kind of two main reasons. One, we really enjoy what we do, and we really are happy with the direction we're going on. And they weren't going to offer too much guidance with the guards opening doors or anything. They kind of just wanted to acquire us and let us keep doing our thing. And we kind of said, well, why? Well, there's no real value then in for the business. So the value doesn't benefit. And two, like, just with the guards losing control and then making decisions, it was probably going to limit our decision-making. And we kind of said, here's our first business. We feel like we're on a good trajectory. Let's just continue doing what we're doing. This is not going to offer a huge amount of value. It's not life-changing money. And again, even if it was life-changing money, would you really go for it? I don't know. I'm actually really enjoying the journey. We have an amazing team we work with. So we just said, no, let's take the learning from it, which were pretty interesting. Let's take the contact. We had a good relationship with the company. And actually, by saying no, I think we actually earned a lot of respect from that company. And they actually have passed on work to us. Work them, because they only do six-figure and above work for a lot of international corporations. So anything that falls, anything below that, they actually pass on to us now. So we've actually earned a good bit of respect. They've also tried to acquire us a couple of times afterwards, after we said no as well. They came back and said, are you sure, guys? Are you sure? But we've held strong in that, and it's been a really interesting learning process. But yeah, something we didn't foresee, but definitely a great learning curve.
I'd say you learned a ridiculous amount from that process, just like what procurement even looks like in a scenario like that. It's actually really refreshing to hear that you were both like, okay, hang on a sec. Let's just see what the crack is here. Let's just see what happens. And You've referenced it a couple of times, the kind of things that you've learned. Something I noticed, forgive me if I'm wrong here, guys, but from looking at the website, it looks like you've left the pricing off. Something not all businesses do. Again, correct me if I'm wrong there, but you know, I've seen it more in the world of digital marketing. You know, I used to work for a digital marketing agency myself. Do you guys have a specific strategy in place here? Is that to maximize lead gen? Is it just to get quality leads in the door? What's the thought process around something like that?
Well, to be honest, we actually, when we launched our first website, we actually had our pricing visible, and we really felt like that, you know, each job is different, each project is different from scale to requirements, and we really thought just putting a price out there for the sake of having a price wasn't efficient in any way, and now we have real metrics on how to, I suppose, maximize our company's performance with regards to developing projects, designing projects, and hosting projects. And so we were like, you know, each project we will give the attention it requires, and it'll cost a certain amount. So, you know, we have minimum engagement values that we tell people in our presentations when we're doing proposals. So that kind of helps the decision making as well, if they're going to go for us over price or not.
Yeah, interesting. Yeah, we constantly had this debate. I was working for a digital marketing crowd last year, and it's very difficult to have a standardized pricing for web development, for an example. Like, everything is very different, like you say. So I was working for one last year, and something I realized from both a provider and a customer standpoint is the sheer amount of competition out there. I mean, I'm sure you guys are familiar with what that landscape looks like, and you can do a lot to like stand out to the customer, but like they're still going to have so many options at the end of the day. So, you know, for someone like a customer looking to set up a standard e-commerce website, like you alluded to, for their business, what are the benefits for them to come to Grafton Digital instead of like trying to do it themselves and figure it out through watching a few YouTube videos or something?
Yeah, this is actually a really interesting question because, you know, we get these questions on the spot as well when someone phones us or emails us and asks this question. So I suppose to start off, you really have to value your time. Because, you know, for example, our team has over 30 years experience in the likes of UI, UX design and development, and, you know, even in e-commerce. So we really have the expertise and the streamlined processes to actually help you get online and sell online without that stress. Now, look, you know, when you're a startup and you have limited budgets, you got to do what you got to do. You got to be resourceful with it. And the likes of Wix, Shopify and other platforms are great, you know, to get started on it pretty fast. But we really tell people, look, if you value your time, you look for a partnership to grow your business as well, because we really have the advice from the years of experience we have within our team, then come on board with the Grafton experience.
Very good answer. And myself and Sam, well, I'm going to talk a little bit more about the kind of products and the world of digital marketing. We've got some experience in copywriting. So both of us would have dabbled a little bit in Fiverr. I'm sure you guys are familiar with it. And I would still do between like a few hundred quid a month, I would say. And it's pretty passive. I have my brother doing most of it. But what I realize is there's a serious amount of demand out there just from the amount of messaging I'm still getting. Now, it'll depend on the business, of course, but do you guys think that it's worth paying a professional copywriter to optimize a website for SEO, you know, like regular, consistent blog posts and content? Or do you think from a lead gen lens that it's better to just invest in like a quick ROI Google AdWords campaign?
Yeah, I definitely think, you know, paying for professional services is really beneficial in order to keep things consistent, because that's what Google, this enormous search engine, wants is consistency, right? Now, you mentioned the word quick. I wouldn't recommend just doing a quick Google AdWords campaign, because even with that, you know, like let's say you're paying a couple hundred euros between Google Ads and your blog writing, then you're actually going to start achieving, you know, higher ROI, because that's very important. And like something I see a lot of people do is just put out blogs for the sake of putting out blogs, and they don't have a purpose. And also the likes of LinkedIn for organic reach as such is really undervalued in Ireland. There's so many SMEs on LinkedIn that are, you know, ready to engage, and businesses are not taking that in. So there's different, you know, there's different, I suppose, social ways to actually advertise your business organically. But putting out blogs for just the sake of putting out blogs, I don't recommend it at all. You got to have a purpose, have teamed months, you know, make a marketing plan, and then invest into Google AdWords as you go.
Yeah, I would certainly agree with the organic traffic coming from LinkedIn. I suppose the likes of Twitter is good, but it's not really optimized for business, good for community. You've got obviously TikTok, which a year ago was phenomenal for organic traffic. It's probably died down a little bit, but it's interesting to get your perspective. Something that I, just on that note, have become pretty interested in over the last couple of years, I would say, is the idea of building personal brand, creating effective content. And, you know, looking at the numbers that some YouTubers are doing these days, you know, they're like modern day celebrities, you could say. Do you think when it comes to content creation, that like having an online presence is becoming more and more important for SMEs today?
Yeah, absolutely. And like, obviously, like I said, we were doing social media work for companies that would have mainly been the SME sector. So we would have been looking a lot at this and over a variety of different industries. And like you said, the new up and coming talent online, Logan Paul, Alison Rae Chardomino, they are the A-listers of today via building a brand. I don't know if you've read Peter Thiel's book, 0 to 1. It's one of the only things you can control is your brand, and your online presence is an extension of your brand. And is one of the only ways you can actually distinguish yourselves for potential customers and current customers by, you know, retaining them. So I do think there's still a lot of room to grow in that space. I know it can be difficult for, let's say a village like ours. We would be working with a couple of different coffee shops in Galway City and in Clare Galway, our local, more local village. And that can be difficult month on month, get very creative. And there is still a lot of fear about getting a bit creative or maybe being a bit bold or going, getting a bit out there. But I think one of the best examples I've ever seen of this is the White Moose in Dublin. I don't know if you've seen it. Obviously, we've all seen him. I've seen him on a live conference. Yeah, Paul is phenomenal. And like I actually saw him live speaking. He's a phenomenal speaker. And I think he's probably one of the best examples of building a brand online. And now he's people internationally traveling just to come see his, you know, restaurant / hotel. So I do think SMEs should focus on it more. I don't think they're focusing enough. I think they're still all trying to fit into the same box. But if they can build their brand correctly and maybe a bit more bold, personalize the brand a bit more, I think the sky's the limit, realistically.
Yeah, yeah. I'm going to move on from Grafton Digital a little bit. But just before we do, like when it comes to your current trajectory, guys, like you're absolutely flying at the moment. You've got your press releases obviously set up in the States at the moment. Like things are going well. What are some of the objectives, the kind of perhaps KPIs that you're looking at in the near to medium future?
Yeah, so I suppose when we're thinking about this question, we have a lot of micro objectives. And again, there are like MRR targets, turnover targets, amount of quantity of projects. But I suppose on a very macro level, I think that's the best way just to answer this, is as we scale, is still to retain the quality of service, quality of product and quality of service. Because that's one thing I've seen from companies that scale really quickly and just scale altogether, is that they really do lose that. And I think that's one of our biggest fears is of doing that. So I think on a macro level in the next few years, we really want to heavily focus on just retaining high level service, high level product, because we think we keep that, we feel as if we keep that consistently as we scale, even if that hinders scalability slightly because project takes slightly longer, we still think in the long term it's going to be a macro win. And I think obviously looking at McDonald's, for example, I'm hitting a blank on the book that they talk about, The Myth Revisited. You know, when you scale, having the same level of service, having the same customer experience every time someone engages with you. And that's really what we're striving for right now over the next few years, is retaining that as we scale. And that would be our macro objective.
Solid thing to aim for anyway. So I kind of want to talk more granular about the trade that you guys engage in. And one of the questions I want to ask you, and I feel perhaps it might benefit a lot of small businesses that are operating solely online today. A while back, myself and Gavin used to write blogs, as we mentioned before this podcast, on various topics. And during that time we were running the site, we learned a lot about search engine optimization, but we could never really find a direct cause and effect for ranking higher in the search engine, even with good SEO practices. For one day we ranked for an article titled 63 genders, and that brought a lot of organic traffic. And for us, and ever since we published that article, we were never able to replicate the success. We were always trying to pinpoint why did this one rank and the other one's not. I suppose my question is, for small businesses that are operating solely online, what advice could you share with them for driving more organic traffic? And is there any tools and resources that you'd recommend?
Yeah, I suppose as just the key piece of advice and what I've seen work really, really well for businesses is, I think a lot of businesses are, one, not fully utilizing LinkedIn to its full effect, and two, don't fully understand the amount of organic reach you can get on that, especially if you're a B2B business. Obviously, this is speaking more to B2B, not as much maybe as B2C. But I feel like a lot of businesses just post their wins and just their successes, and here I've won this and I've been here and that, and that's great and all. And obviously that does generate traction. That will, for some businesses, generate an element of interest for potential customers. But actually giving value to your audience and actually building an audience that actually enjoy your writings. Like, I know one of the guys I follow, again, I understand he's an individual, but again, he has courses and I will consider buying them. Dave Gerhant, I'm very certain, he put out phenomenal marketing advice consistently over and over again. I really enjoy actively going reading his piece. And I wouldn't be someone who would follow a lot of blogs or read a lot of articles. So I really do feel like from organic traction, organic reach perspective, is by actually putting out good content that your audience would find interesting and pumping out over a newsletter and over LinkedIn. I think you can generate a lot of organic traffic off of that. I think if businesses really double down on that and not be concerned after month one it's not doing great, or month three it's growing just slightly, just do it consistently. And like Eric alluded to earlier with regards investing in blogs, it is a longer term investment. You can't look at it as 1 to 3 months, 6, 12, 18. It needs to be part of your multiple year plan to actually generate more organic reach to your website and in turn generate more sales, if that's what the objective of the website is.
I would add a little bit to that as well, just on like a very deep technical level, right? So there are so many free tools out there for businesses to use from all sizes, such as Google Analytics or Monster Insights. These are all tools that are free, and you can integrate them on your website and allows you to actually track your customer engagement on different pages. So you can see where are the points, where is, what is the heat map look like of your traffic that are, you know, your potential customers that are going onto your website. And you got to analyze that and make a plan of why are people getting stuck on the homepage? Why aren't they going to the blog page? Is it not there on the navigation bar? You know, you're getting down to these nitty-bitty grits there. But and then the other thing as well, there's a phenomenal tool out there called SEO Ability and also developers.google.com. These are tools where you insert your website link, your article link, and it'll break it down into different pages of why Google doesn't like what you're doing. For example, content overload, embedding videos onto likes of YouTube rather than onto your own website will allow Google to pick up the website at a better scale and will allow you to rank higher, if that makes sense. So there's so many different ways, but I suppose looking at the analytics is the most important thing. Unfortunately, there's no magical tool out there that I know of anyways that will automatically do and optimize everything. You have to pay attention to it and you have to constantly upgrade and I suppose regulate your SEO from a physical to organic to paid levels. And that's why it's really good to have an agency or a freelancer looking after your work that way on a contract basis.
Yeah, I know from even running the site, it's an absolute nightmare. And in hindsight, if I was going to go back and do it, I'd definitely be doing business with one of you guys. Like, I wouldn't put myself through that pain again. But anyway, Dara, you were mentioning there as well regards to LinkedIn and being consistent with content. I was wondering, is that a formula that you would apply then to all social media platforms? Or is there a reason specifically why you said LinkedIn? Do you believe that's currently the most underrated platform? And what should businesses be doing to leveraging various platforms other than being consistent?
Yeah, absolutely. So I suppose it really breaking it down to your buyer persona. So who are you looking to target? And hence why I actually prefaced with the fact that it's a B2B is why I specifically said LinkedIn. But again, like as Gavin said, you know, obviously TikTok's organic reach a year ago was crazy. It's not as good now, but still very, very good compared to the likes of organic reach on Instagram and Facebook. But again, conversions are very, very poor on the likes of TikTok. You know, you're seeing huge creators struggling to sell tickets, struggling to sell merchandise. And I've seen that firsthand. I've seen behind the scenes of what those sales look like. So I think from a B2B perspective, especially in SMEs in Ireland, if you're looking with little to no budget, LinkedIn's fantastic. If you're looking for a B2C, obviously for people 25 and below and you're looking to build brand awareness, TikTok's fantastic. But obviously having yourself, regardless, having your presence on Facebook and Instagram are still hugely beneficial. But again, it depends on your demographic. If you're looking to sell this to 16-year-olds, Facebook already doesn't make much sense to you. And LinkedIn doesn't make much sense to you. It's TikTok and Instagram. So again, starting with your buyer persona, looking then at one organic reach, because obviously to reach people, new people on Instagram and Facebook does cost you a good bit of money. That's most of their business is made up of paid advertising. Buyer persona, look at what platforms, what demographics on what platforms, and then formulate the strategy. And the one other thing I see a lot of businesses doing, and I think could be really easy fixed, is they try and get really, well, they do one of two things. One, they either post all the same content across all platforms and don't listen to the individual platform, or two, they way overthink it and they try and have individual content for each platform, and it just takes a tremendous amount of time. And I don't personally see a lot any of them. I haven't seen any personally actually getting full results out of that. So I know this is Gary Vee's model of marketing is build macro content. So like Eric alluded to earlier, having a themed month. Let's say for us, let's say for the month of August, all our content is SEO centered. So content on TikTok, well, we're not on TikTok, but if it's on TikTok, so TikTok kind of SEO, then you're on LinkedIn posting blog articles, then you're on Instagram giving little quick graphics about SEO tips for businesses, and just trying to utilize the work as a macro basis, you know, on a macro level of content, and then spreading out over all platforms and respecting each platform as well. And this is where a blog can come in really handy and working with a copywriter, because I've seen that a blog or a piece of video content is a really good macro piece of content, and then either break into smaller articles or smaller piece of video clips can then go out your socials, and then you're cutting down the amount of workload.
Yeah, something Gary said recently, I can't remember when he said it, but it was like a lot of people are joining TikTok, and I think someone asked him like, what should a business do if they're joining TikTok or a personal creator or something like that? And he just said, get on the platform, follow some of the top creators, figure out what videos perform well and what's working well in terms of the specific content, like you say, with, you know, maybe like a carousel on Instagram or a quick blog post on LinkedIn. And only then should you go and start posting. Whereas a lot of people jump on TikTok and they record a terrible video and it gets 4 views and no likes or something. And think, well, oh, someone told me TikTok was great. But you need to kind of listen to both the audience, but also you need to kind of listen to, okay, what's actually working on the platform before you go doing anything. That's just my 2 cents on that. I wanted to ask you guys about something that it's kind of lost its prevalence in the last while, and it's pay-per-click advertising on like Facebook and Instagram. It does seem that era of like drop shipping, like using AliExpress and just running a ton of Facebook and Instagram ads, it's sort of died down, mainly from saturation, I would say, in the last couple of years. Do you still see any use cases at all for this type of advertising?
Yeah, absolutely. I suppose the way I'm going to tackle this question is, if they aren't working or they become redundant, why are people still pumping tens, if not hundreds of thousands a month onto trying to sell that course for you to get the Lamborghini, etc., right? So they are working. And then product PPC or display ads are also working because, you know, remember, you're targeting the people that are interested in your product, and you're potentially trying to get new people as well. So you're constantly reusing that database that you already have. You're not reinventing the wheel here. You're just repurposing content and just putting it in front of people into little bite-sized pieces. Therefore, they can consume it, and you're hoping for that conversion to happen. And you're going to try to keep your CPM as low as possible with just different, you know, running smaller advertisements with, you know, more purposeful or more specific regarding gender, age, hobbies, etc. So you're creating that customer profile really specifically. For example, like we're running product advertisements at the moment for an Irish-based business, and they were actually selling more international products than they were selling products nationally. And since we took over, they've been doing as much sales nearly nationally as they're doing internationally, which is great to be able to replicate that over a 2-month period.
Fantastic. An insightful answer, which is what I was expecting. I really appreciate it. I have just one more for you guys. It's not something we've asked yet. We're seeing this term, and you guys, you did reference it slightly earlier, the term UI, UX. I feel like I'm seeing that everywhere lately, and I haven't really seen it before. I have to Google it to figure out what it was. I only recently learned about it myself. So for the listeners out there who are in a similar position to me, they've seen it, but they're not really sure what it is, or for businesses, not really sure how to optimize it. Do you want to just offer an explanation and perhaps provide some insight into its importance in modern business?
Yeah, absolutely. So I suppose let's start off with the term. So UI stands for user interface. That's how things look and function. User experience is how someone might engage with that piece of content or the features that you have on your website. Both of these are very important, and they're actually something we look at the very start of building a website, because we got to look at what is the target, what is the purpose of their website, and we got to build it around A, the brand, but B, the customer as well. You know, your website has to be customer-centric, easily accessible, responsive. If you're not hitting these points, you're going to be missing out on those conversions. Like, a lot of times people are like, I just want to have a website for the sake of having a website. I might put up my products there on this page. But if you're not putting, you know, it all goes down to psychology. If you're not looking at your customer psychology and identifying their persona and how they're going to interact with it, you're not going to achieve that conversion, because basically you're making it hard for them to get to that end result.
Yeah, it's interesting enough, and I think a lot of people might overlook it as well in the planning stage too, especially if you're like a novice starting off. But anyway, I think like we've asked all the questions, so I think we'll wrap it up there, lads. It's been an absolute pleasure to sit down and chat with you today, and you know, I really appreciate you going into the technicalities of those particular questions. But before we let you go, could you tell the audience where they could go to find out more about you and Grafton Digital?
Yeah, so I suppose we're actually only after relaunching our own website, so it's graftondigital.com and Grafton Digital on LinkedIn, Facebook, Instagram. You can find us all there. You can link back. I suppose ourselves, Dara Jordan on LinkedIn, and Eric and TEDx on LinkedIn as well, but you'd probably find us sharing articles. So yeah, that'd be where you can find us.
Brill, fantastic, perfect. Well, that's it for now, and we'll catch you in the next one.
Thanks for listening to the Kickstart Garage. This show is for entertainment purposes only.
This show is for entertainment purposes only. No one on the show has provided investment advice. The information provided by the Kickstart Garage podcast should not be construed as investment advice. The opinions and views expressed on the Kickstart Garage podcast or those of the participants do not reflect those of the host or sponsors. The Kickstart Garage, its producers, sponsors, hosts, and guests shall not be liable for losses resulting from the investment decisions based upon the opinions or viewpoints presented on the Kickstart Garage.